Blog Talk Radio.
Caller.
Yeah, this is Paul Cote. Is Phil available?
Yeah, I'm talking to you, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
Good. How was your trip?
Made it back. It was excellent. Did you get the pictures that somebody took at Rolling Thunder? I had your boat shirt on. I think I was
excellent.
The only one there with one on. Yeah.
So how you doing?
So, we're doing good. We got back Sunday, being on the road 4 weeks, and it was good. You know, we only had two rain days, and rode through a couple of light rainstorms. But went from Nashville to Memphis, through Mississippi, New Orleans, Florida, back through Atlanta and Savannah, and up through. I met Jan, met Ron in Asheville. And Rolling Thunder, then Gettysburg, Intercourse, Pennsylvania.
I heard that one. That was pretty cool. You sent Chuck an email from Intercourse?
and I called him too, telling him I didn't want to have intercourse with him. I just wanted to let him know I was in intercourse.
There you go. But I have Tom and I have Bessie on the line. I'm going to bring them in.
Tom McGrath?
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, because, I mean, that's the news of the – that's, great news.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Hello, Tom.
Hey, it's been a long struggle, guys.
How you doing?
We're doing great now.
Excellent. I was shocked to see that. I thought they were going to give you the ropes.
No.
And I heard that they filed some complaint against you or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In the middle of the O'Day litigation, a complaint was filed by the city's attorney with the South Carolina Ethics Committee on Lawyer Ethics, basically where that is currently is that the committee has ruled that I violated the code of professional conduct or for professional responsibility. Basically citing a section there about assisting or encouraging someone to commit a crime or fraud. And there's only one problem with that, and so we're going to take that to the next level because the helmet law was not a crime. It was a civil matter, even though it was an ordinance in which they specifically said that these matters are civil in nature and they're going to be tried in an administrative court, which of course that was kicked. That court was shut down by the Supreme Court basically in March of 2009. So, it's one of those things where I think as a lawyer, the First Amendment applies. And the other part of a lawyer's duty is to represent and help people who can't afford counsel. And, of course, we handle all these cases on a pro bono basis, which I think is supposed to be what lawyering is supposed to be about. They did find that I violated this rule, and so We're going to probably be going into the Supreme Court of South Carolina on a petition, try to have that, even though it doesn't actually, it doesn't have, maybe it doesn't have worldwide effect. you get a reprimand. I got what's called a letter of caution. And, of course, my problem with the letter of caution is the first sentence says, we found that you violated the rule of professional conduct. And that's never happened in all my years practicing law. And of course, that stays in my permanent file. So, you know, I'm not about to roll over and let that go by. So we're going to be going into court on that. We'll be petitioning the Supreme Court to have that set aside. And if they don't do that, then we'll probably be going into federal court.
Hey, Phil, can I interject here?
Sure.
Yeah, hey, Tom, Paul Cote from Massachusetts. First of all, thank you for all your work. Online, we've been following it, since the city instituted the ordinance. And I heard that they had filed this a complaint with your local bar. I mean, my opinion, lowball tactics. I've worked in a law office as a paralegal the past 21 years, and it's a cheap shot. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, and why I wanted to interject, is there anything that we can do, like in other states, even if it's, I know you donate a lot of your time, talent, and money, and your staff, but now this is personal with you, and sometimes you gotta keep your clear head. But if you need some fundraising or some money or some support that we might be able to do in other states for you, I'd like you to tell us what we can do.
Well, I really, really appreciate the offer, but as you all know, I mean, my firm, we make our money handling injury cases, and this is kind of how we pay back the community we make our living with, is doing this kind of thing and hiring outside counsel to represent me, and that's on my nickel, and I really am not looking for any funds from anyone. I just guess if I had one thing, I would say, keep me in mind and know that that our firm is out there fighting, and we'll do whatever we can wherever we can. And as a result of this, we've now opened an office here I'm actually in Columbia, South Carolina tonight, and we've opened an office here in Columbia. Well, it's actually in a little town called Casey, which is like it's across the river from Columbia. It's everybody considers it basically almost a part of Columbia, but it is a separate town. That's come about, and I hired a lawyer here who, of course, rides a motorcycle, and we're set to go here, and so we'll have somebody permanently in the state on this thing. And we are looking at, just to give you a little insight, we're looking at, you see, the court decision focuses on the helmet law. What's also lurking in the background is that we understand that the Myrtle Beach has gone and purchased a bunch of decibel meters for their noise ordinance. So that may be the next fight down here. We'll see. You know, they may not do anything, and then again, you know, but we're here and we're ready. If it happens and the folks want to present them, we're going to do it on the same basis.
Yeah. So, do you have any estimate how much the city probably spent on pursuing?
Yeah, I can tell you that a year or so ago, they had already spent over $100,000 in attorney's fees. So that's just an attorney's fees. Now, I don't know, but we're going to be filing a Freedom of Information Act request to find out exactly what they did spend on their legal counsel, because, you know, that we fought them. See, we fought them on, we had two court cases on behalf of the O'Days. We were trying to get the injunction first, and we couldn't get that, and the city kept saying, well, we're changing the law, which they did. After that, or right after that injunction hearing, and then after when the law actually, the ordinance actually went in effect, and they had the ride, we filed a summary judgment, action in the circuit court, and had a hearing on that, and the judge basically dodged the bullet and said, well, I really can't determine at this time. You know, it's sort of, I think, just kind of ducking the issue. It's an easy way out, and it's a constitutional issue, and, you know, he's local and got to sit there. And but anyhow, so in addition, then we, at the same time, we filed a petition in the Supreme Court. So we had them battling basically on two fronts. And I don't really know how many hours we put in, but I know damn good and well that for every hour we put in, I'm sure they put in one. And you know, I can tell you that I hired some people to help me, and I know about what my firm spent on this, not even counting motel bills and travel time, just to, you know. Other people that I hired an appellate lawyer to help me, and I hired a constitutional lawyer, law professor to help me. So I know what that cost, and I'm sure that the city's bill was a hell of a lot more than mine.
I understand they're still targeting motorcyclists. They're still harassing them, too.
Well, I'll tell you what. You'll be pleased to know that Tuesday when this opinion came out, there were about 70, 80 motorcycles that left the Beaver Bar in Merle's Inlet and rode up 17 up to Ocean Boulevard in the city and went right down Ocean Boulevard all the way up to 10th Street. You know, I was with the group when they went into the city, and nobody was stopped. All the people on the street were giving us a thumbs up or cheering or clapping or, you know, waving their hats at us. I didn't, and neither did anyone else that I talked to, see anybody put the thumbs down or anything like that. So I think the point was well taken. But we haven't had any, I mean, since the opinion came out, to my knowledge, there has not been, and that was Tuesday, there has not been any form of harassment at all. None that I've heard of, and I kind of feel like I would have been the first one. Now, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We know that we don't know, but we understand that a whole lot of money was spent on decibel meters, and I'm expecting, and all of us who ride are expecting that may be the next thing, which would be the because that's under the noise ordinance. That's a little bit different than the helmet.
But yeah, we're going to be going through the same thing here in California on the 21st.
Well,
we're talking about revising a 27-year-old law.
Well, see this, but you may be dealing with it on a state level, and that's a little bit different. What we've got here is the city deciding, well, now we're gonna have this. You have to have an EPA sticker on your muffler, you know, and it can't be over so many decibels. Well, the state statute on mufflers already says what's required.
We have the same thing in court right now, Tom, up in Massachusetts. And in South Carolina, judges are elected, correct?
Yeah. Well, it's a sort of that kind of process where they're basically appointed by the General Assembly or the legislature. But
right, yeah, here our governor appoints them. But we had filed suit. The city of Boston had enacted an ordinance requiring the, you know, visible EPA imprint on the on the motorcycle, and a $300 fine if they couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And similar to your arguments with the helmet law, our state already has a decibel limits, which got it's a motorcycle noise abatement statute and regulations, Commonwealth of Mass regulations. And from our perspective, clearly the city of Boston was. Ordinance was repugnant to state law.
Right.
Because none of us had been cited, we had a couple things in Massachusetts. One, in order to contest an ordinance, you have to do it within 30 days of it being enacted, and you have to file it in our superior court.
Yeah.
And the city argued, you know, a motion to dismiss for because none of us had been harmed.
Yeah.
They hadn't issued any tickets yet. And from my perspective, the judge took the easy way out and said, you're right, you haven't been harmed. But on our preliminary injunction to strike it down or to put our enforcement on hold until the issue was decided,
yeah.
that in that decision said that we hadn't been harmed, but if the city issued any tickets and we were right, then the riders could get back the fines plus cost of defending against them. So it kind of put us on equal footing, because when was the last time you got a ticket, beat it, won, and you got your cost back?
Right, that's great. That's really a win. I mean, I understand the standing issue, what they're saying, that nobody's been harmed, so you don't have standing. And that may well be an issue with us in South Carolina. We may be able to come up with a way around that, since no one's been given one of those tickets yet. But, you know, but we may be faced with the ruling the same way. Hey, nobody's been harmed, so you don't have standing.
But even if, we've appealed that to our appellate court now, because we still think that on its face, the ordinance is repugnant to state statute, and they don't have the authority to do that, just similar to what your court or your Supreme Court ruled in the Helmer case.
Right. See,
wasn't some of the Helmer cases that were filed by other plaintiffs dismissed because they didn't have standing a couple of years ago, like some of the business owners? Association.
Well, the business owners filed a petition in the Supreme Court also, and one guy with a helmet, and the Supreme Court didn't issue an opinion in that case. It was the same issue we had, but I haven't seen an opinion. I mean, ours came out Tuesday morning, which was a shock. It was a big shock because in South Carolina they only issue opinions on Monday. And yet this thing came out Tuesday morning. I'll tell you.
They usually don't issue. And you argued it, what, in February?
I argued in February, yeah.
Yeah, February. I mean, that seems to be like a quick decision, February to June. Massachusetts standards.
Well, in Virginia it's the same. It's a lot longer. But South Carolina is generally runs anywhere from 3 months to 12, 13, 14 months. So I had told my people, just let's relax. We don't know, but the quickest that I'm aware of that they've rendered an opinion in a case was 3 months. So I told them, I said, look, maybe 3 months, probably more like 6 months, could be a little longer. So we were glad it came out. Of course, Myrtle Beach's position is, we got rid of the bike week. Well, you got rid of the bike week, which means you got rid of about 300,000 to 400,000 to 500,000 people coming there and spending an unbelievable amount of money just for rooms and an unbelievable amount of money on everything else. And, there's so many people out of work down there now. Restaurants are closing. When they had bike week this year, of course, I was there. We don't spend any money in Myrtle Beach. But I had to go into Myrtle Beach to see a client of mine. And so I went on Ocean Avenue, Ocean Boulevard, the main drag. It was just like going up that road in February. It was unbelievable. Now, there were plenty of bikers down in Merle's Inlet and Surfside Beach and in North Myrtle Beach. Plenty. But there was nobody in the city of Myrtle Beach. Not at all.
And I guess, and a lot of times you got to feel a little bad for the businesses that support during,
Well,
the other thing too is they're going to be voting with they're going to be voting with their own pocketbooks too. I know a lot of the business owners don't live, they have businesses in Myrtle Beach, but I mean their customers.
Here's the problem in Myrtle Beach, in the city of Myrtle Beach, unlike most places in this country. Every single person on the city council runs at large. They don't have districts. They don't have precincts. So all of these people that are sitting on the council are from the same basic area of the city, which is the people with the money. And, all the people like the waiters and waitresses and people like that, they basically don't live in the city because it costs too much money. They live in the outlying areas. So they don't get to vote for these schmucks that are basically have destroyed their livelihood. The city had to increase. They had to pass a 1% tax increase for everybody. To and that money was supposed to be used for increasing tourism. That's what it was for, and they gave it to the Chamber of Commerce. And if you follow Myrtle Beach politics online, you'll find that there's been a lot of articles about how this money that was given to the Chamber of Commerce from the tax money to, you know, to help promote tourism, $300,000, I think, was shifted into the pockets of politicians by politicians receiving cashier's checks. So, I talked to
I thought Massachusetts politics was bad.
Oh, yeah, well, Myrtle Beach is, it's right up there. It is right up there. I mean, from what I've seen and what I've read, but the sad thing about it is, a lot of people have bought condos here and Myrtle Beach. They got nobody coming to rent them. They've lost the whole month of May. So now they got to depend on the people coming after the kids get out of school in June, middle of June. And see, here the kids get out of school middle of June. So they got half of June, July, and August to make their money.
Whereabouts in Virginia is your firm based out of?
My firm is in Richmond. That's our home office in Richmond. Yeah. We have office in Richmond.
State. I was there last month. I went through Natural Bridge and up to Charlottesville.
Yeah, it's a beautiful ride, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It is beautiful. But I got to tell you, Pennsylvania is a lot better because they have choice in Pennsylvania.
They do have choice in Pennsylvania, and that's a beautiful country to ride, too. Yeah.
Okay.
I've done some riding up.
I have Betsy on the line. Betsy, do you have any questions?
Betsy, you
there?
Do I have any questions? No, I just have kudos.
Thanks.
Congratulations for all the work you've done.
Absolutely.
The only thought that crossed my mind, and I discussed this with Paul, is that it's going to be interesting to see if there are any ripple effects on this. And it may work well for your noise ordinance there that they're trying to enact, and we're hoping it'll help us here in Massachusetts. So it just goes to show you something that happens in one state
could
possibly benefit or happen in another state. That's why we bikers' rights activists always have our eyes and our ears to the pavement, so to speak, to see what's going on in other states so we can see if it applies where we are.
Well, that's why I think get-togethers like Beast of the East and things like that that the MRF does are super.
Right.
Also, something that you had said earlier, and Betsy can attest to this. I mean, with the 80 bikes or so riding down, like Ocean Boulevard that day after the decision was made, and ordinary citizens giving them the thumbs up. I mean, we had a situation in Massachusetts in the early 2000s where, one city, we started going wild on writing, helmet tickets and bow pipe tickets. And it was the bikers that stood up to them, right? And we won. And we won at magistrate's hearings and at trial levels and at the District Court of Appeals. And we got, no test, no ticket if they don't have a decibel meter. They can't issue a ticket. A police officer's ears are not calibrated. Then they had a decibel meter, but they weren't registering, or they were using the 50-foot drive-by test rather than the stationary test decibel levels. And those got thrown out. But, every time we would ride through the town in a protest, ordinary citizens were giving us the thumbs up because they appreciated that people stood up rather than rolled over or laid down or, and there's things in your life that at a certain point in time, you make a decision whether you're going to live on your knees or die standing up. And some of these issues, and it's usually the motorcyclists and the military members that do this. And
also the vets that are pissed off from getting pissed on.
Yeah. True.
Another thing I wanted to add that, and it just escaped my mind. Oh, my God.
Well, while it escaped your mind, let me promote Betsy because she's being elected into the Sturgis Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
This year. And very good kudos. You've done a lot of work over the past 30 years, Betsy, and I know a lot of people in Massachusetts do appreciate it, and nationally, too, with your biker bits.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I just saw something today where Betsy was giving kudos from Progressive.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They wrote me up in the agent's reporter. I'll send it out to you all so you can see it. But I was going to make a point about our Storm the State House that we do. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. Paul, tell them how at one point in time we were the most effective lobbying group in Massachusetts, and we got more legislation through than any other group. And we were just a bunch of, say, renegades. That's pretty much how they looked upon us.
Yeah.
One of my favorite recollections was the night that Mitt Romney, his election night, his swearing-in party, There was a local state senator who supported all our issues. He was a Democrat. He was having a party in Somerville, and Mitt Romney was having his party over at a big hotel in Boston. And we knew we were going to be drinking, and it was in the winter time, so we took a car, and we stopped at the Democrats' party first, and it was free beer and free food. Then we went to Mitt Romney's party, and it was like they had like three bars to serve 3,000 people, and the lines were long. So we got back in the car and went back to the Democrats' party. The state representative was there, and he introduced me to some lobbyist, and the lobbyist said, "Hey, your group should hire me." And I said, "Well, how many bills did you get passed?" And he said, "Well, we got one out of committee." I said, "Well, fuck you. You should hire us. We got six bills passed." Right? And the state rep spit out his beer, laughing.
Right.
Yep. But people got to get involved. They got to, you know, all politics is local.
Yeah.
From the local level to the state level and even to the federal level. I mean, we sent out over 3,000 postcard endorsements for Scott Brown. I was at his primary election night. There was less than 200 people there. I was there at his victory night, and you know there was 3,000 people there. And after 10 o'clock, and he made his speech. You know, everybody funneled out, and most people did. You know, and then it was again only 200 of us.
Right.
So
right.
I
think people, if people realize, I mean, even in biking community, like we started a pack in after I had the fight in Virginia in 1992 to get the HOV lanes open in Northern Virginia, and I won that fight. I started a pack. VCOM, and you know, what we do is we say to people, look, send us some money. What we do with the money is 100% of that money is used and given to politicians. We go to their events, we go to their, you know, their dinners, we go to their cocktail parties. I hired Jim Cannon that's with me now. He does our lobbying. He's down there in General Assembly every day, and when they're in session, and we have a meeting once a year where we get together and we have a brainstorming session. Well, what do we want to do? What do we want to push? Who's for us? Who's against us? You know, that kind of thing. But the PAC, the reason we did the PAC was I go around the state and I talk to a lot of different groups. Well, you know, somebody that's in Abate may not be in Hog and vice versa. And somebody
right.
that's Goldwing is might, you know, that's the only thing you're in, or somebody that's a Honda Ride or a BMW, you know, then the clubs or the groups don't mix that much. They don't even see each other that much. I said, look, send me the money. We'll use it all for political purposes. I'll pay the overhead for the pack. I'll give them an office. I'll hire a guy to run it, to be the lobbyist, and we'll do that on my nickel out of my law firm. You just send us your donations every year, and we'll give all that money to politicians. And, you know, you give somebody $250, $500 at our level, you know, that's pretty significant, and they don't forget it.
Yeah, it's also getting the face time. My experience has been that most elected officials, they have two or three issues that are their pet projects. They, you know, certainly have the leadership of the, you know, like a speaker, a Senate president's, you know, agenda that they kind of got to follow. Whatever the media drives, and on most issues, they go either way, with depending upon who they know and who's informing them.
Right.
And that's what I think PACs do. That's what lobbyists do. And lobbyists might have a dirty word, but I mean, it's just like if any motorcyclist sits on any rights board or is in some leadership position, even in their employment, they know that a lot of stuff is done in communication.
And that's just it.
And you hit the nail on the head, because a lot of these groups do not mix or interact, you know, so there has to be a vehicle, a way for them to be notified as to what's going on. That's been a passion of mine for the past 15 years. And it's starting to trickle out there further. But, boy, it's been a lot of work, because you get the local hog guy who doesn't care as long as he can get on his bike and go ride to eat and have the ice cream or whatever and go home. You know, he's
happy. Until he gets cited or until
exactly.
he gets pulled over.
And then all of a sudden
right,
they're
or until
up
he gets
and
harassed.
Right.
Yeah.
But then, you
so
know
if,
what?
If you,
also,
if you don't do politics, politics is doing you.
Yeah,
right.
But you can also get...
Well, I'm $59,000 into a helmet ticket that I haven't paid yet.
Yeah.
I love that.
You mean out of pocket or the community's out of pocket?
The community.
Yeah, that's great.
If I go downtown, I get a police escort everywhere I go.
Good.
And with motorcyclists, we've said in Massachusetts, you know, what we ride, where we ride, and who we ride with separates us. But on the issues that are two wheels or three wheels, we got to get together, fight together, and win together.
Right.
Exactly.
And
the two guys on bikes that gave me tickets, their service was terminated on the bikes, so they lost $800 a piece per month.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Bill Keenan
and I.
When
I pulled up next to the guy and I seen him in a car, I thought he was going to bend the steering wheel in half.
Yeah. Well, with some of the stuff back in the early 2000s. We had some rogue state police officers, only two or three of them, that were stopping riders, taking their helmets, and leaving them stranded on the road. And
ooh.
If they didn't get their bike towed or get a helmet within 20 minutes or a half hour, their bike was towed. Right?
Yeah.
And we fought. We helped those riders, won contested tickets, but we also recommended that they file requests for letters of investigation into the conduct of the trooper at the scene.
Exactly, and an IA complaint does wonders for you.
Yeah, well,
absolutely. You have to push back.
It took 2 or 3 years, but those troopers two of them were reassigned from the road to desk jobs, and the other one was eventually dismissed from from his career.
Yeah, what we've done in Virginia is anybody that gets a ticket in our state, we represent them for free. We'll go anywhere in the state of Virginia to represent you. If you've got a helmet on your head and you get a ticket, and we hire a court reporter. So, you know, everything is there. It's on the record, and so far we've never lost a case. We've had to appeal a few to the circuit court.
But
our statute is really a wonderful statute. If you got to wear a helmet, if it meets any one of the three standards, either FMVSS 218, ANSI, or SNELL, it's legal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nobody can find the ANSI standard.
Well, and you know the argument with 218, all right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, theoretically, they got to test them, and they got to destroy the test.
Yeah, with all three of them, they'd have to test them, and they don't have any way to do that.
No, and they destroy the helmet in the process, and the defense doesn't have a way of testing the destroyed helmet.
They told me to take mine off, and I refused. And
we'll
send it out for testing, and I started laughing, and she asked me why I was laughing, and I said, because you have to get 7 more.
Right.
I said, it's not against the law in the state of California to manufacture your own helmet.
That's
so
right.
She proceeded to tell me, well, I was told that it says cop and not law enforcement officer inside there, so that doesn't make it a legal helmet. So I asked her, show me what statute she was talking about? And after about 4 minutes, she told me to have a nice day.
Yeah. Yeah. I had one of my guys was stopped, and the cop says to him, he says, and who do you work for? He says, I work for the law office of Tom McGrath. The guy says, get out of here.
Exactly. We have another caller from... I'm gonna bring him in and see if or who he or she and see what they have to add or ask a question, if that's okay.
All right. Yeah.
Hello, caller. Hello, caller. I guess not.
Right. And Tom, you've probably been through it too. I mean, we say as long as you got something on your head and you got something in your pipes, we can contest it. But if you're in Massachusetts right now, if you're running straight pipes, there's no question, there's no doubt they're illegal. You know, and ask that, and as long as you got something on your head, we can do something. I mean, we've had a couple people that they take their helmet off during some charity ride and they get cited and they're like, tell the judge you were stupid. Nothing we can do. But as long as you got something on your head.
That's the same thing here. The commissioner of the California Patrol said, as long as they're not wearing a tin pot or a ball cap, I don't care what they got on their head.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's kind of where they are in my state too, in Virginia.
We have our caller now.
In Massachusetts, we were able to change the ruling that if you're in a permitted parade or in a funeral, you can take your helmet off.
We have that in Virginia.
Do you? Oh, that's a good thing. It's a beginning.
Yeah, if it's, I think it's like 15 miles an hour, and it's a, an organized parade,
So then most of your rides, if they're through a local community without going on the highway, you should be able to ride liberally.
Art, are you on the phone, Art?
Yeah, I'm here now.
Any questions you'd like to ask?
Well, you guys brought up something, and I haven't been able to find it.
Where they say you can ride
without a helmet for a funeral procession or a parade, but I can't find anything on the books.
Where are you from?
I'm from California. San Diego.
San Diego, okay. I'm not familiar with California law, but in Massachusetts, it's not in a funeral. It's in a properly publicly permitted parade.
Right.
So in different towns, cities and towns, had a different permitting process. You've seen Veterans Parade, Day Parades, you've seen Little League Parades. So most cities and towns have some permitting-type process in Massachusetts where either the local chief of police issues the permit or a licensing commission or board issues the permit. And respectfully, if they issue a permit for a Little League Parade, right, then they should be, if you apply, and they might put insurance requirements on it, liability insurance requirements. So, as long as they do it standard, and the requirements are similar, But Phil, what do you know about California parades?
God, you gotta wear a helmet. We're gonna have a protest ride on July 4th down at Fiesta Island that we have every year, but people are gonna ride there without a helmet. And then there was an attorney last year that went to represent everybody that got tickets, and I understand they were dismissed, but it was just a show of force, I guess you want to call it.
So in California right now, you can't ride. They don't have a permitting process or a statute saying that helmet choice and properly publicly permitted parades.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
might be a bill you might want to file.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of those things in parades. I mean, theoretically, I got thrown out of a parade in Newburyport because I refused to put my helmet on, and the police didn't know that the statute had changed, and it created they made a comment to the press that they didn't need to know the law, they just needed to enforce it, which, of course, added more fuel to the media storm and fire.
Because the chief of police here rides a fat boy with shotgun pipes, and he wears a beanie helmet, and things kind of backed off when I sent him a picture of himself pulling into the parking lot at the police station.
Yeah.
With the caption how can you enforce something that you're breaking also?
Yeah, we had a situation, I think Bill Gannon sent it out. I mean, he took a picture at a concert of the lieutenant of state police motorcycle unit had a helmet on that was on the federal motor vehicle failure list. Hey, is somebody's cell phone ringing? I'm hearing bells.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. But again, I think that's one of the things that the Every year at our helmet bill hearings at the State House, the people from the Head Injury Fund come in and they testify against helmet choice. And when we got that bill passed that allowed helmet choice and probably publicly permitted parades, they said, well, now the camel's got the nose under the tent.
Well, what I always tell them, and my thing with all these doctors and emergency room personnel is, 40% of the brain injuries in this country are the result of motor vehicle accidents. And the rest of them are mostly either from assaults or falls. And so I say,
at home, no less.
If you're that concerned about me, why aren't you that concerned about your family? If 40% of the head injuries come from motor vehicle crashes and we're less than 2%. So that means
we're being targeted again.
I'm here to tell you, if I wasn't wearing a half shell helmet, I wouldn't be talking to you guys.
Well, that's fine. But you had to, make it your own choice.
That's it, exactly. After 17 years, I had some asshole decide I was wearing what he didn't approve of.
Right.
Well, each day I do my biker bits, I find accidents, injuries, and deaths. And I have to say, within the past 3 weeks alone, there's probably about 60% of the accidents where people have been killed that were wearing a helmet. And because they don't die from the head injury, they die from the internal injuries. And a lot of them are right-of-way infractions, and that's even more frustrating.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, putting a helmet on somebody's head is throwing a Band-Aid on an open, gushing wound. It isn't going to work.
One of the other things, think about this, guys. In each state, with your Division of Motor Vehicles or your highway department, there is a safety commission. It's in Virginia, it's the Transportation Safety Board. I'm the motorcycle representative on that board, thank God, because most of the people on there, they're about transportation safety. And they will vote for anything that says we're going to save a life or we're going to prevent an injury. And so you need somebody on there that says, well, wait a minute, let's bring some common sense to this thing.
Right.
And I know that there is one in each state because that's the board that gives the federal funding for various motor vehicle safety issues like clicket or ticket. And all that money is passed to the states to be used for motor vehicle safety. So there's one in each state, and if you can get yourself on that board or get a motorcyclist on that board,
Interesting you say that, because I just received a letter 3 days ago from the Registrar of Motor Vehicles. I had written a letter to the governor wanting to know where our safety fund was this year, and he obviously chose not to reply to me and sent the request on to the registrar. So she replied to me, and I've never seen a woman dance so much in my life. She just basically told me what the safety fund was, which, of course, I already know, and said to me, well, it's subject to appropriation. So I wrote her back, and I said, I know it's subject to appropriation. My question was, is there an appropriation or a line item this year? Because everyone I've spoken to can't seem to find one. And then I said to her, I would be more than willing to act as a liaison to the Mass DOT for the safety fund if such a thing is possible. And I know several other people, and I was thinking, of course, of Paul and Bill, who would be interested in working on a panel as well. I just sent that letter off yesterday, so I don't know. It took me a month to get the first reply, so I may not hear until August.
But remember that they're getting federal funds, and they got federal funds for motorcycle awareness in this last year, and they got them the year before last, because we just gave our $120,000 to the motorcycle. See, in Virginia, our DMV runs our motorcycle safety training program. Okay, in Virginia, the money that the state charges to have my motorcycle endorsement on my license, back in '95, I got the law changed to where that money is put in a trust fund and it can't be appropriated, can't be used.
Oh, boy, Paul, does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, Bill Gannon was involved back in the, I think it was 86. You can correct me, but
yep.
We got $2. We got a bill passed that allocated $2 of every annual motorcycle registration fee to go to a motorcycle safety fund, but it's subject to legislative appropriation. We got 108 as of September of last year, 180,000 registered bikes. So times two was 360, but they only appropriate about 185,000.
Get that money the hell out of there and get it into a special fund by statute. We've got a special statute in Virginia that we got through. We called it
a registry revenue retained account.
Yeah.
We filed a bill with that, but when you file a bill with the legislature trying to take legislative authority away from them, they generally don't like to give up that authority.
Oh, right.
No. It just separates it out. And here was our issue: the motorcycle rider training program in Virginia is not funded by any taxpayer money. It's run by motorcyclists. I mean, the motorcyclists, the money we spend, and it's tough to get in them. And so the state was looking for a solution. And we said, okay, we'll agree to pay more money for our M-stamp. It's $2 a year. We'll pay more money for our M-stamp on our license, but we want the money to only be used for the motorcycle rider training program. So we can have more sites to give more people an opportunity to learn to take the course because it's good, blah, 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 blah. And they went for it. They went for it as a safety issue. When it came up in committee, they went for it as a safety issue, a way to train more people to properly ride motorcycles. So that's how we kind of got it through, because they didn't want to be on record voting against a safety issue.
Yeah.
I think we tossed something around like that, Paul, didn't we?
Yeah, we had a bill, again, to keep it a registry revenue retained account.
But didn't we talk about increasing the fee for motorcycle registrations for that purpose or something to that nature?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have sites like through your DMV that you can go to and take the course and it only costs you like $70 or $85?
No, all our sites are privately owned businesses.
Yeah. So we've got both.
And they get like the registry of motor vehicles that manages the motorcycle safety fund and the rider education program. They oversee the program, but it's private businesses that run the sites. And the average cost is about $275 in Massachusetts to take the beginner rider training.
Yeah, see that was one of the ways that we kept the cost down is that this fund pays the instructors, and there's the public courses that you can take, and then there are private courses. But the public courses, those instructors and all, are paid from the fund. And the rental that goes to the community colleges for us using their parking lot, that's paid from the fund. And the guy that works for DMV that's over the whole state program, both public and private, all his salary and that staff is paid from the fund. From that extent, it's a self-funded program, and the state doesn't really have any of its money, so to speak, or taxpayer money involved. And that was another part of the selling point of it was, we're providing something for the citizens that the motorcyclists are providing that gives the citizens a good deal. It's for safety, and the DMV personnel, they're being paid out of the fund, not out of the general tax money.
Right.
So that's kind of how we approached it, and
What do you got in California, Phil?
Nothing like that. Nothing like that. We're getting the weenie out here, man. They want every dollar they can squeeze.
Well, Phil, get on that. Look at that transportation safety board, and I'm telling you, if you can get on it, you can have a little bit of impact as to where the money that comes from the federal government for motorcycle safety, where it goes.
Well,
hey,
I can
Phil?
Tell you, hold on one second, Art. I can tell you that when I went in and I had a meeting with the internal affairs guy and the sergeant in charge of traffic, and I informed them that they got 10 grants, well, one grant to do 10 checkpoints and they were going to do it as motorcycle safety checkpoints. And they decided not to do that because they couldn't tell me who gave them the money. All they know is they got it.
Right.
They couldn't tell me who the person was that signed the Allied Agency memo that they're now using to enforce the helmet law. And they didn't have a clue. I don't have the paperwork in front of me right now, but I slipped all that stuff in front of them, and I thought their eyes were going to fall out of their heads when they started reading it.
Well, get your Freedom of Information Act out, and the money is coming from the federal government. It's basically NHTSA money that comes back to the states, and so you know you can find out how much money they got for each purpose from NHTSA under a Freedom of Information
right.
and you can find
yeah.
it out.
And the last thing, what they're using those federal funds for is like increased motorist awareness with the signs on the highway, with the commercials on TV and radio. And I think they're doing a pretty good job on it. And at least over the past like 5 years, even though we've had increased registrations of 3,000 to 6,000 new motorcyclists, or at least bikes on the road, our fatality rate has just about stayed the same. Where in a lot of states, with the boom in motorcycle registrations, the fatalities increased also.
Right.
So I think that the motorist awareness is. I know that when I just rode 4,000 miles last month, picking up my bike in Atlanta and then doing a tour, and I know several states I rode through had the overhead highway signs, when changing lanes, watch for motorcyclists, let's share the road. Motorcycles are everywhere.
Right, we had John Delceno hook that up out here.
It's gratifying to see those.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, Phil, John Del Santo is our rep on the Highway Safety Board.
Okay.
He's a Bait 6, and they meet in Sacramento.
Okay.
And he was just talking because of his health, he can't go up here the next time. So he's trying to let them take somebody else, and he was asking if anybody wanted to go up at
there
the Abate
go,
meeting
Phil.
Last Sunday.
This Sunday?
Last Sunday, we had the Abate meeting with Abate 6, Kate Sessions. So he was talking to the guys to see if anybody wanted to take his place because he can't make it.
Oh, John? Yeah, I talked to him today. He's a little under the weather still, but he might be calling in. But, I'll call him tomorrow and touch base with him.
As Tom said, if you can get a motorcyclist rights activist in the Sacramento area that can attend the local meetings at your state capital of that board, I mean, that's like Tom said, I mean, having input, having a seat at the table while the policy is being discussed before it's being passed and implemented, you can diffuse numerous things.
Remember, I was here, Paul, but they discontinued it because they had no funds.
Wow.
No, the way it's been in Massachusetts, we've always had voluntary input into the transportation and in the registry with the change of while it was a Republican administration with the changes to a Democratic administration. It seems like it's a closed door right now, but. But the person that gets the federal highway funds for motorcycle in Massachusetts, they're all appointed by the governor, and it's an extra job. They're already state employees on our governor's Highway Safety Bureau, and are within our Registry of Motor Vehicles, and there's really no advisory board.
Yeah, but see, in our state, I'm thinking that this is the law that they have to have a board of people outside, like outside of BMV, to approve where the grant money goes, to approve the grants. That's what we do in Virginia. I sit on that board, and we approve the grants. In other words, NHTSA says, BMV says, okay, here are grant requests from various organizations in the state. They need this, we need that. NHTSA's got X amount of money that they're willing to put in this and this and this. Okay, where do we spend the money? And so on the board decides whether to approve the grants or deny the grants. And
I'd like to talk to you private, off air. Especially if you know where that federal code is with that, because I know for certain in Massachusetts, there's not an advisory board or there's not.
Yeah, if you could send me an email on that, it'd be great.
Citizen participation, you know.
See, that's
again,
what's so
all,
good
all,
about
all
this
government
kind of
employees.
Networking.
Yeah, I will be back in Virginia next week. Give me a, you know, go to our website is Motorcycle Law Group, or just look up Tom McGrath Motorcycle Lawyer. It'll get you to our website. You can email me through that.
Okay, we'll do that.
Yeah.
Guys, give me a chance. I want to see if there's other callers
on the
line.
Please.
Yeah.
Hello, caller. Dennis, are you there? Dennis. I guess not.
Hey, Phil. Isn't
yes,
Mark
sir.
From up in the Sacramento area?
Yes.
If you talk to John about that, maybe we could get him in there.
I talked to Mark earlier, but he had something to do tonight, but he's going to listen to the archive, so you can let him roll right now. We want to talk to him.
Yeah, because I was thinking maybe if we could talk to John and have John drop his name, see if he could go into that meeting as our rep.
Yeah.
That'd be
that
a hell of
good.
A good one. And he's in the local area.
And then what else is going on, Betsy?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. You caught me off guard.
How about you, Paul?
Well, we one of the local Harley dealers, Boston Harley, tonight it's raining and it's raw and cold in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
It's about 60 degrees.
I'm watching the sun go over, down over the mountains, but that's another story.
Well, the Celtics are ahead, too, right now.
Yes. No, they
right
aren't.
Now.
Okay, my Hawks won last
it's
night.
37-33. Boston just fell behind. Sorry.
Well, you guys want to feel better?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm standing in my backyard getting drizzled on in San Diego.
Oh, good. I feel better.
I figured that would make you better.
But our local Boston Harley dealer, they have Throttle Thursday nights, you know, like drive-in, and they're fully supportive of both of Massachusetts, and they've helped us out, you know, promoting and to a certain point discouraging riders from, you know, going into Boston and potentially getting a ticket. But if anybody in Boston, anybody, you know, gets a ticket in Boston for this EPA, which even though they passed it, they enacted the statute a year ago, June of 2009, no tickets have been issued, and we think it's because of the lawsuit that we filed to preempt it, and the judge's initial ruling in the in our request for injunctive relief, if any tickets were issued, they would have to pay, and we won, they would have to pay the riders back, not only the ticket, but the cost of defending it.
Right. That's great information to have, and I appreciate your sharing that. I really do. I've got to get off here. I've got someone else that I've got to talk to again. Long
I
want to
thank you for agreeing to come on tonight.
I want to thank you, too.
Anytime we can get our heads together and talk about motorcycling and what's going on, that's a good thing.
Thank you, Tom.
That's how we learn,
right?
Thank you
for standing up and defending those riders and doing it to pro bono and you got a slap, a bad slap,
and you need help, please
put the word out, and we'll be there.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to kick ass. All right, guys.
Here you
thanks.
Go. Hoorah.
Thank you.
Hoorah. Bye.
Bye.
So Phil, how was Nashville?
Nashville was good. Just we got some issues with He stiffed Baker with a hot check for $4,000, and then he made good on that. He decided he wanted Baker to help him do some work at his new shop. You come to find out that the guy went to jail for fleecing people.
Yeah, he's a scam artist.
He claimed he was a NASCAR driver. I think he drove only one race, and he built people out of $40,000, $30,000, and this and that. But he ended up doing 3 years for fraud and interstate wire fraud and all that shit.
Yeah.
And then he stuck it to Baker. He had him do all this work and then stood there telling him what he wanted done, how he wanted it done, all that. They did everything. Five guys got together, took all the money they had, took food out of their family's mouths to do this job because they were going to get paid in the end. And then the guy told me he didn't have any money.
I thought, Phil, I thought he told him, was it the Tuesday after the holiday, that he would have the money. That never panned out?
Yeah, right.
Oh, what a scumbag.
Then it came down to where he owed the first business owner, he owed them 70 grand for the rent. And the next business owner, he owned, he owed 60 grand for the new building on the lease, on the leases. I understand today they padlocked the doors.
Good.
How's Baker doing?
He's doing good. I'm gonna shoot him a text right now and see if he wants to call in.
I had the opportunity to meet him when I was in Nashville when I met you, and definitely nice guy. You know, I know he put a lot of sweat, a lot of his own money into the event, and then the Nashville floods happened, and certainly a question at that time whether to pull the plug on the event. And it's my understanding the city had asked them to not pull the plug because they wanted to certainly give give everybody notice that the city was open and operating and running. And he went through with it. And
I was instrumental in making sure that the winner of the leather jacket got his jacket.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah. He didn't want to pay the guy, but that's kind of how it worked out there. But then all this other shit hit the fan afterwards. And I'll shoot you a copy of everything after the show.
And again, if Baker's listening,
he's going to call in right now.
Hello?
Yes, Art.
Hello?
Yes.
No, I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. I thought you did. I'm sorry.
But
Baker's going to call in right now. And then I'll let him go from there. But so, Paul, give me a little bit more background on your trip, man. How was it?
Excuse me. Before Paul says anything, I want to first of all thank him for acknowledging me. But I don't want him to be the unsung hero. Paul deserves accolades of kudos and applause. He is tenacious in the halls of justice and has been behind all of our legislative successes. We'd be lost without Paul, so I just wanted to give an oorah back to him. What, did I lose everybody?
No,
I'm here.
I thought you were still talking.
Oh, well, I could go on and on and on. I mean, Paul is like...
Have you talked to Mac about the insurance?
He told me that he got a reply, and I told him, last week on the show that I would help him, but I haven't heard back from him since. He did shoot me an email, but it was on a different subject. So I think that's pretty much in limbo now. Paul, they have issues with the insurance out there. They don't even have a standard contract. And when a consumer goes in to purchase motorcycle insurance, they don't even know what it is they're purchasing or how the coverage works. And Mac's got his hands full, and I'm trying to help him out, with... When you could be beneficial with backing me up on that, how to go about getting all that changed. Paul, are you there?
He's there. I don't know if he's still listening or not.
I think we lost him.
Oh, he's there.
Oh.
He's there. He might be...
Maybe he's watching the Celtics.
Yeah, he might be watching the Celtics.
They are behind 43-37 right now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So who do you think's going to win?
I don't want to say, but I hope Boston wins.
You should have called Janine.
Yeah, have him turn some cards and see.
Yeah. Probably tell you that Celtics need some more defense.
Yeah.
They got a pretty good offense, but they need a little more defense.
Yeah. Now, you saw Edmonton up in Canada. They're doing a noise ordinance now.
Right.
This stuff is just like, it's spreading like wildfire. You know, all these communities are going to be popping up with all these noise ordinances that are trying to supersede the state.
Right.
Wow.
I have Baker on the phone.
Okay.
Paul, are you there?
Yeah, I just got back on.
I have Baker on the line. Baker.
Hey, man. Hey, Paul. How you doing? Hey, Philip. How you doing, brother?
Good.
How you doing? Well.
Hey, Baker.
Hey, Baker.
How you doing?
Good, honey. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm hanging in there, you know, fighting a good fight.
If you wanna elaborate, dude, you got the chair. Go for it.
Oh, hell, man. You know, I guess the only thing, you know what's going on, Philip. I'm going to work on the situation here, and I guess I have a mission. I'm going to get that guy, man. We're going to take him down. Got to do it. So that's what's happening.
Yep. Yeah, Paul was kind of curious on maybe you want to give him a little background.
Yeah, because I had to leave Nashville before the event started.
Yeah, that was a pretty unique thing, Paul. You should get my email address from Philip, and I'll send you some real specific info. But in short, the guy he's a con man, and he's already done a couple of years federal time posing as a NASCAR driver. But he did legitimately drive a NASCAR truck series one time, and he got $250,000 out of people for sponsorship, did federal time for that. Got out of jail, came to Nashville, and now he's posing as a bike builder and a chopper guy, and he's just burned people left and right here in town. Mike Leffingwell is his name, as a matter of fact. Tennessee Motorsports. You wasn't here long enough for that part of it, Paul, and he was one of our sponsors at the Rock and Ride event for charity for the Second Harvest Food Bank here in Nashville. And one of the weird things was bad for me, his sponsorship check bounced. But being a con man and me being, I guess, a sucker, you know, I let it slide, and then he made it good, but it was all part of the con in the long run, because then he got me for 5 G's after that. And so, you know, he built his way up the ladder, and that was kind of that's the short story of it. You know, I legitimately said, oh yeah, man, you know, to myself, anybody can have a little issue with a bank deal, and you know, that's why his little sponsorship check bounced. And so I got sucked into it, and I'm not the only one, and, you know, live and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He's,
well, first of all, it was, you know, I know you and your family put a lot of time, energy, and effort into it, certainly a worthwhile venture. And to have somebody to bullshit you like that and to string you along and to screw you over, I mean, that's you know, fucked up.
Oh yeah, this guy even had on his website that he was he tried to say he was affiliated with 81.
Anybody that isn't and is bragging about that should learn the lesson.
Well, he's going to learn his lesson. He also had a death head up there that he wasn't supposed to advertise.
Yeah, but when
don't brag.
Absolutely.
Well, it's just going to be one of those things, you know. It's a round world. What goes around comes around eventually. It sucks when you're at the bottom end of it through no fault of your own.
There's certainly
a lot of people that sit on the sidelines and, you know, and will criticize what you did or what you could have done or should have done, you know, but they don't get into the fire. You know, you got into the fire, you put your name, your reputation, your family's time, your energy into it, and you did everything right from where I stood and what I heard. So my hat's off to you, and don't give up.
Well, thanks, Paul. You know, and I hope that we can hook up again sometime somewhere along the line, man, and have a few beers and chat and get to do some stuff. I hope all of us do, you know, Betsy, Phillip, all of us get to hook up and do something, man, and have a good time.
Hey, I got to tell you, from Nashville, I went to Memphis and Beale Street, Civil Rights Museum. I mean, great city, great town. You know, people were really good down there. The music was great. The food was great. Nashville was cool too, but Memphis was was spectacular.
Memphis is a party. I actually lived there for 2 years before I moved to Nashville, And I know the town pretty well, and I tell you, it's, when you get down there on Beale Street, it's not like any place you've been anywhere else in the country. I'm sure there's, New York has its spot, and there's several other cities around the country that have something like that, but that's very unique in itself to the South.
Yeah, Phil, have you ever been to Beale Street or Betsy?
No, I'm bad. Beale? I haven't.
No, it's Phil? The closest I got to going the opposite direction was when I took Baker's bike, and he kind of like was, I was just enjoying the ride, and he was hanging off, waiting for me to catch up, but I was just too busy into the ride. It was great.
Yeah, Beale Street, I had never been to Beale Street before in Memphis, but I've been to New Orleans and Bourbon Street, and I went from Memphis to New Orleans, and to my sweetheart partner, I told her, I said, this is better than New Orleans and Bourbon Street. I mean, this is crazy.
Really?
Saturday night, over 10,000 people. The street's wide. Just about every restaurant has a live band, and they've got public bands. They've got people doing acrobats out in the street, street performers. I mean, and you can walk around with drinks. And
wow.
I got a hotel nearby, so I didn't have to worry about riding after drinking. And, got hammered and enjoyed it.
There you go. That's what I liked about
Savannah. It's a great town, man.
Same thing.
It's a great town. They sell beer right.